Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and ways to go within to find your true self. Today I am delighted to welcome Guido Mina Di Sospiro, author of The Metaphysics of Ping Pong, who will show us how his love for spinning a featherweight ball takes him from his local ping pong club to training drills with a world-class coach, sharing many philosophical principles of Plato, Aristotle, metaphysicians, the philosophy of Carl Jung, Sun Tzu's war tactics, the I Ching, and much more. Guido was raised in Milan, Italy, in a multilingual home, trained as a classical guitarist, and attended USC School of Cinema Production. Hello, Guido, and thank you for joining us today. You really are a Vitruvian man of many talents and interests, with many stories to share today.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Yes, I'm delighted. Guido, as listeners of Healing From Within well know, my guests and I seek to understand our spiritual and human nature in relationship to universal energy. And what we're looking for, what we want to know, is more about ourselves, our emotions, illusions, and our multidimensional state of being. So as we share our experiences today and talk about these leaders in the metaphysical, scientific, religious, and medical fields, what do we really learn? We learn to transcend fear and worry and achieve well-being, peace, balance, and a greater state of love of self and others. In today's episode of Healing From Within, we will see that what began as a hobby, ping pong, was actually the platform for a journey of the heart and soul and a quest for philosophical clarity.
Yes.
Yeah.
In some ways, yes, it was. It was a passion that I had as a kid, and then I set it aside because I did so many other things, some of which you mentioned. And then I rediscovered it in my middle age because I played with one of my kids in California. We were at the Henry Miller's Memorial Library in Big Sur, California. And I have a table tennis there, so I played with him thinking I would easily defeat him, and it was the other way around. So, but anyway, so I came back to the D.C. area where we live, and I asked my the contemporary oracle, Google, to tell me of a place in which to go play ping pong, and I found a community center nearby, and I went there, thinking, oh, I'm going to bring my own racket, and oh, you're going to get dressed, and I'm just going to go with my moccasins, my shirt, and and as it happens, the place was peopled primarily by Chinese players. And what I saw in there, I mean, first of all, I couldn't see a ball. I mean, it was all 11-0, 11-0. I couldn't play. I didn't know what they were doing. It was just playing with acrobats or something. I had no clue. I'd never seen anything of the sort. And then after an incredibly frustrating 2 hours, you know, I said to myself, okay, I can leave it at this and still think that I can play ping pong, or I can look into this. And for some reason, which is not masochism, because I'm not a masochist, but I decided I would stick to it. And I went back to this community center, and then I found another club, which was even more difficult because the players were even better, and it offered longer hours. And I went there. For about 6 months, I was defeated by just about everyone. Everyone, including people pushing 80. And then I began to make sense of, you know, all the technique, because there's a lot of technique involved, the spin and how you angle your racket and da 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 da. And slowly but surely, I began to have my first wins, et cetera, et cetera. And as this was happening, I noticed that perhaps because of my background, because I've written many books and I've been interested in esoterica for many years and things that do not meet the eye, in other words. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of parallels between table tennis at that level and principles of the perennial philosophy. For one thing, table tennis at a high level, a competitive level, is all about spin, which means the ball never really is traveling in a straight line. It's always traveling in a curve. And that reminded me of non-Euclidean geometry as opposed to Euclidean geometry. And then also, the whole thing about table tennis is non-linear. You have to calculate the spin and the parabola and this and that and make the ball come down, sucked by the effect of top spin, etc. So, there were so many unusual things about table tennis. And then as I studied it, I realized that in fact it is the game in which spin is the most important, because the ball is so small and so light, you can impress upon it 150 rotations a second. So as the ball is flying in the air, it's also spinning, much like the Earth is spinning in the universe.
I think what you began to see, if not right at the beginning or in your childhood when you played tennis, you were in the mountains. We didn't talk about that, actually. Mm-hmm. But you began tennis playing at a summer camp. And you were, I think you were drawn to it because you recognized that it was a parallel to understanding life and yourself. If not that in your mind, some part of you within sort of did that. And you say there are two types of players.
Yes, at a very at a competitive level. I mean, I should clarify. One can play ping pong as a pastime, just pushing the ball across the net, and have a conversation, and that's perfectly fine. Now, the other way is it becomes competitive with a lot of sweat involved, etc.
All right.
And it's very painful. And at that level, yes, in my opinion, because I've frequented so many clubs all over the country and also in other countries around the world, there are two players. There is the metaphysician, which is the one who tries to develop his skills and learn all the secrets of spin, which essentially govern the game. And then there's the one who refuses flat out to learn anything about spin and uses rubbers which are either anti-spin or with long tips that reverse the incoming spin, but they don't spin at all. In other words, they just say, you know what, I'm not going to be bothered with learning the secrets here. I don't care. I'm just going to be, because it's disconcerting. I mean, it's difficult to play with these people because you expect a certain type of return and it never comes because their rubber there is weird. Except the thing is, they're not playing. It's the rubber that's playing. So in my view, these rubbers should be banned by the International Table Tennis Federation, but they're not banned. So sometimes we have to put up with these players. And many of us, metaphysicians, they just say, oh, you know what, I'm not going to play with you, I'll pass, because there is no, every time you play table tennis at a certain level, sometimes you approach what Plato called the world of forms. Form, we've been used to think in the Western world, especially, it's a formality. The word formality comes from form, but it is not. Form is the essence, and when you do perfect form in table tennis, you execute the spin perfectly, etc. The ball does certain things that look like they're defying the laws of physics. And you are getting a little closer to the secret. And sometimes I witnessed this, even it happened to me or to people who were playing and I was just watching. They will have such a perfect rally, at the end of which they'll say, wait a minute, what did we just do? Did we do that? Because it's so much beyond what we normally do. It's like, you know, the great champions that we see on YouTube doing. There's like, did we really do that? That's when we catch glimpses of the perfect world of forms.
Well, so, what they are in is they're in a zone. It's like this humble game seems to become a metaphor for understanding the entire human condition.
And also, you know, I mean, I've just, the book has been, Metaphysics of Ping Pong has been received very well, thank God, in England and now in the States. And there was a recent review in which the reviewer was particularly fascinated beyond the whole talk of the metaphysics and the physics involved, etc., which is in fact the essence of the book. But he was fascinated by the fact that I have met so many people through ping pong that I never would have met normally. And some of them from the strangest countries like Madagascar or Mongolia or something. And normally I don't think I will ever have an interaction with somebody from Madagascar or one of those places. And even if we don't speak any common language, it doesn't matter. We speak ping pong. And there's a brotherhood, in a sense, or that happens instantly. It's an incredible connection.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, there is a room in which there are 10 people, and each one of them is from a different country because table tennis happens to be very cosmopolitan, and they share nothing but table tennis. But that is enough to transcend all the barriers that have been imposed upon us by society, by customs, whatever. There is nothing. There is no class. There is no race. There is no creed. There is no religion. It's just a bunch of united people in the name of ping pong.
And I'm telling you,
it sounds silly, but I think
it really doesn't, because
it really works. I mean, it's like, and then you begin to learn about them. You become friends with them. Maybe you go out after 2 or 3 hours of playing to have chicken or whatever. And then you start, you know, finding out about their families and when they're from and what they studied and how they're working, whatever. It's fascinating. And as you know, I have friends from all over the world now, from Vietnam to Bolivia to whatever, you know, you name it, I play with them. And all thanks to ping pong. And also think that if instead of pursuing wars, etc., people pursued hobbies such as table tennis much more passionately, then maybe we will have fewer wars. I mean, it also sounds silly, but maybe it isn't. I mean, people say, you know, why should we kill people when I can have fun?
What are we here to do? We're here to raise our level of awareness and be more loving within our heart and soul. And this brings me to something. You're using the word here, imperialist, mm-hmm. imperious, mm-hmm. and then you're using the word metaphysician. And you said that the empiricists take the easy pass. They don't strive
yes.
at much. It seemed like people who are not aware, who are unconscious, who are so in the material world, and then
yes.
the metaphysicians seem to me like people who are out on an adventure to know more about
yes.
themselves and the world and energy, and they're very, very different. So they approach it. One approaches it in a way, the metaphysicians approaches in a way to grow and to know more about the human soul. And the empiricists sort of take the easy path and go into
yep.
a state of denial. So it has
yep.
a very spiritual overtone, these words, and the players who decide which way they're going to be in life.
Yeah, and it's the strangest thing. There's another category of players which I call the basement kings. The basement king is somebody who has a table in his basement, and he plays occasionally with people who never play. So he thinks he's very good, he or she, usually he. And then this one basement king decides to come to the club. He comes to the club with his homespun style, and of course he's destroyed because he doesn't know the real game.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them, instead of saying, oh, I get it, so this is how it's played. My thing was kind of an illusion. This is the real McCoy. So no, they insist. They come back and they keep to their game, to whatever they've learned on their own. They do not want to improve or learn. And it's very sad because they just never improve. And then conversely, you have the opposite. You have people who come to the club, they can hardly hold the racket, and within 2 or 3 years, they're playing as the best ones there. Through a lot of work, a lot of struggling, a lot of learning, a lot of humiliations, if you will, a lot of, you know, a lot of humbleness is required, really, to go through all of that, because most people think they know how to play ping pong, and then they come to a club, and, you know, some people don't have the patience of pulling up with the, you know, the discipline, etc. But those who do, and then you see them 3 years on and they're playing like pros, you say, wow. You know, and they're inspiring. I love those people. I mean, I really do.
Because they have a passion once it in, you know, when it lights up their heart and soul, they stick with it because you need consistency. And you cannot just expect to do anything in this world without dedicating a lot of time and energy to it, and love, and love also.
Yep.
Now, I want to go back to something you said about war. You mentioned General Sun Tzu in the classic The Art of War, which suggests that all warfare is based on deception.
Yes, yes, ideally, yes. He was a very clever sort of legendary figure who wrote his manual, The Art of War, which was used by, you know, cross nationally by all sorts of, you know, military leaders down the ages, and recently it's usually read by politicians, etc., to, you know, because it's all about being astute and pretending to be weak when you're strong and all that. Well, in table tennis, although it is played so well by the Chinese and East Asians overall, that is not the case at all. There is no subtlety. It's full front attack.
We're going to say, like warfare, it can't be based on deception and subduing the enemy. It has to be won fairly with talent and ability and hard work. Just
yes.
Like these two concepts of war, I would say that what you want to do in any activity or event mm-hmm. that you pursue is mm-hmm. to give it your all.
Really, it's really a game in which, because of the progress with the equipment, really, defensive play is almost impossible. At a very high level, you don't really have defensive players anymore. Everybody attacks because, well, it's the best defense in a sense. Because you just cannot stay there and take the pounding. You have to start it. So it's a very aggressive game in a sense. But of course it isn't. I mean, it's aggressive in the sense that you have to attack to make the point. But it is not a contact game. There's no physical contact. And, you know, I've never seen a fight erupt in the many games I've seen. Oh, except once. There was a Chinese tournament in which I became the referee because they couldn't take it. All the families were rooting, and it was a team tournament, and we were the only Western guys, the four of us, and then everyone else was Chinese, and they came with all their grannies and their nephews and their cousins and their brothers and their sisters and their wives, and they were cooking while so it was a whole big, you know, folkloristic event, but they were very, very passionate about it. So I said, look, do you need a referee? Yes, please.
There's also a lot to be learned from watching as a referee, I'm sure. But let's get on to something else. How did ping pong change your opinion of humanity? Because I know you met some very interesting people. You met Joe and Alex and Gilbert, and you realized it was an honor to be in their country, and you learned a lot about their lives.
Yes, I call them, these three players in particular, I call them giants of the human spirit. Each one of them had a very bad, difficult past. One of them had lost one eye, but he never lost his, you know, his sort of smiling attitude towards the world, etc. The other one came from Vietnam, and he said when we were playing, I was a prisoner for 8 years in Vietnam. The first year was the best, no torture. And it sounds like a joke. It is a joke, but you can imagine the agony of going through that. And this man came to the States, and all he had was a shirt he was wearing, okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 15 years after, there he is playing, smiling from year to year, with the enthusiasm of a child, and playing very well, by the way. And you couldn't tell. I mean, you know, and he has to be a superior soul, a superior human being, for having put all that behind him and for being happy just to be alive and to play and to be in a peaceful environment. And people like that, you know, when I see him or others like him, and there are many such wonderful people, I feel very small.
What you feel is the beauty of the human spirit to overcome such challenges, and
yes.
Very honored.
And humbled and dwarfed, frankly, because, I mean, they're just fantastic people. And there's so many of them. And that's the thing, and, you know, I had a certain opinion of mankind when I embarked on my table tennis adventure without knowing that it was going to be an adventure. I mean, I ended up in China, et cetera, explaining the book. And then I came away with a completely changed opinion of mankind, which is the following. I think that mankind overall is very decent. There are a lot of very nice people in this world, except they don't make the news. The people who make the news are terrible people. I mean, you don't read about, you know, nice people. I don't know why.
Guido, I agree with you. I look at the news. I read about the politicians. I read about the war now in the Middle East and the problems
in
China. And it's everywhere. And I say, there's so many good people. Why do we have to focus on this type of behavior?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely, thank you very much for bringing that up. Do you have a favorite competitor?
In fact, Yes, I do. His name is David, and I don't mention him in the book. I don't know why I didn't mention him.
Well, actually,
and I'll tell you why it's funny.
You mentioned Jamie and his brother.
Oh, no, yeah, his name is Jaime. Well, Jaime was a past professional table tennis player. He ranked high up there among the best in the world back in the late 70s, early 80s. So he works for a World Bank now. He gave it up, but he's just another category, and, you know, he has been my mentor, although I often resisted learning through him, but, in fact, sometimes, you know, the shortcut, in fact, is a long cut, and it's better to go with a teacher, but,
absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anyway, so that's one. Another one, it's funny because when we play, we say to people looking at us, you know, we are intimate, we gave each other tennis elbow, which is true. I mean, we were using too much the backhand, and the backhand in contemporary table tennis does a very strange movement, and it gives you tennis elbow. And then for 6 months, both he and I were unable to lift a coffee cup from the pain.
Oh.
I mean, it was incredible. So, yes, we gave that to each other by insisting so much on the backhand, you know, which is not a very natural movement, and it's only done by your wrist and by your arm, really, not by the whole body as the forehand is. And so, luckily, I found this sort of, it's a rubber bar that you do certain movements with, and that fixed it over time, but I'm much more careful now in how I play my game, because I know that I cannot overdo with the backhand, etc. But anyway, when I play it, because playing table tennis at a high level is a little bit like dancing. After a while, you have your favorite partners that you want to dance with, and you don't want to dance with just anyone, but you want to dance with ones, because it's kind of a chemistry. And the same happens in table tennis. I mean, there's some people who play, they may be great players, but I just don't have fun playing with them. Or others, they may not be that great, and it's not so much about winning, but the rallies are a lot of fun in themselves. So by playing, you know, going to two or three clubs, you get to know all the players there, and then you begin to pick the ones. And it's, of course, it's reciprocal. They also like to play with me, so fun.
It's like finding a friend or a teacher or a mentor. It's a part of the journey of self-investigation and the search for an inner truth. And in my book, The Living Spirit, I expressed it this way, and I wrote, how do we begin to see, to feel, to know, to hear in conjunction with higher souls, teachers, loved ones, higher vibrational beings, angels, and indeed the voice of God? No book can replace your own experiential exploration of your divine connection. Begin by finding an energy healer who can teach you about how your energy sustains a healthy life force within, and how you can deal with daily life events in a proactive rather than reactive manner. And that's what you're really saying here, with finding a mentor, finding a person you love to play with and dance. That's a part of finding the divine and finding a spark
it's true.
Of recognition.
And as far as the teacher goes, I mean, I resisted that for a while, but then I explain why in the book, the whole thing about initiation and anti-initiation, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, even Taoism, there are maxims in Taoism that explain that You need a teacher at first, you do, and then slowly you become your own teacher.
Absolutely.
Once you're unlocked certain potentialities that you have all locked up in you.
Yes.
But at the beginning, I recommend in anything, not just table tennis, like as you mentioned, I used to play the classical guitar, and I was lucky there, it was the opposite. I had a teacher who was so good that within 3 years I was playing the repertoire. I mean, I was playing the repertoire by, you know, like people like Segovia, etc. I could play, and I've always knew that it wasn't really me. It was just he gave me such fantastic fundamentals.
No, you know
things
what that
easier.
Teacher did, which all good mentors or teachers do. They made you aware of your own potential. They opened up. They set up an environment. And
yeah,
they allowed you to come out and to display your spiritual talents. So that's a beautiful thing. What do you hope readers take away with them after reading The Metaphysics of Ping Pong?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's a very good question. The Metaphysics of Ping Pong is kind of a labor of love because it's a distillate of a lot of grueling hours, maybe 5 years spent all over the world, all the way to China, playing ping pong with progressively better players. And and finding analogies with Carl Gustav Jung, with the School of Athens, with Taoism, with Sufism, with all the I Ching, etc., etc. What I like to do is, I like to think that there are people out there who are not aware at all, really, about the perennial philosophy. The perennial philosophy, I should explain, is a certain strain in religion and in philosophy that seems to be saying the same thing with different words across the world, irrespective of different cultures and times. So sometimes you will find the same concept expressed by Plato, or Sufism, or Taoism, or Zen, or the Native Americans, etc., etc. So it's a beautiful thing, because the fact that it's reverberated around the world by also different cultures in different times means that it is really truly universal. And I think it's very interesting, comparative religion, comparative philosophy, and I just like to take people and make them go through this book, which is funny here and there, so it's quite entertaining, and through my, you know, adventures and misadventures and stumbling here and going there and this and that, I introduce them to concepts that perhaps they will decide to explore on their own. In other words, I give them the key, or I could say I give them the bicycle, and then it's up to them if they want to pedal or not. But
absolutely.
The idea is,
your book,
you know, so it's,
your book is,
yeah,
much more than about table tennis. It's about helping people realize the ultimate teacher, which resides in their own heart, and to make a stable connection with this inner wisdom. It's beautiful. And I want to thank you, Guido Di Sospiro, author of The Metaphysics of Ping Pong, as it offered you a journey of self-discovery and interactions with people, many exotic countries, and colorful people, helping you realize that if mankind dedicated more time to playing, there would be less hostility in the world and probably fewer wars, as you said earlier. To enjoy and purchase this engaging, spiritual, and thought-provoking sports book, go to Amazon.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, Guido has shared how his love for table tennis, like all love, is a passion for understanding life and living it in a most ethical and moral way, so we may become the heroes of our own life journey and know ourselves, our friends, and the world and the universe in an intimate and satisfying way. We spoke of the two types of players, the metaphysical and the empiricists, and Guido wrote, "It is hard to understand why the various types of table tennis empiricists would resist escaping from the cave. But try to talk them into changing, and they'll resent you and point to their occasional wins against advanced players. In their mind, winning is all that matters. How one wins is irrelevant." Guido and I would hope you find your way to move out of the cave or limitation of your fears and conditioned thinking to see the bigger reality and the joy and possibilities for reaching your full human potential and for finding wisdom through all the challenges, events, experiences, and people in your life who offer you the opportunity to grow, evolve, and simply be. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to read about and listen to leaders in the field of science, spirituality, the art, music, sports, and metaphysical areas of investigation to find ways to develop and increase your personal power. Shows are also heard on DreamVision7Radio.com and WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl.